Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
We're very fortunate. We just have such great kids. And the basketball, you know, they're good basketball players and sometimes really good basketball players. And we've had, you know, I've been a part of some really good teams. But beyond that, just being around the type of people that we're fortunate enough to coach and then see them grow.
And our guest this week, Nat Graham. He is the associate head coach, men's basketball at the University of Pennsylvania. Nat, thanks so much for coming in studio here.
Matt, thank you for having me.
So as we are talking here, halfway through the season, give or take, game-wise for you guys, does the season go by fast? Is this a time of year where you kind of can take a breath and kind of catalog and recharge here?
Yeah, I think the season for us, particularly as coaches, goes by incredibly slow while you're in it, and then you get to the end and feel like it went by fast. You know, us in particular, you know, unique to the Ivy League, we play so many games in November because of scheduling issues mostly with finals, which we're in now. So we play a lot of games, and that really, when you get to the end of that, that stretch into the early December before finals, at the end of that, it feels like a real grind. And then we have this break during finals. I'm sure it doesn't feel like a break for the players as much as it does for us, not having to take any finals. It's been quite a few years since that. But, you know, for us as a team, it's like a chance to kind of really focus on ourselves again and try to correct the things that maybe we've had troubles with up until this point. So, yeah, I mean, when you're in it, it feels like it's always a grind. But at the end, sometimes it's like, wow, that flew by.
I'm sure there is not the average day, but what is a day? Like, what goes into during the season a non-game day? Like, kind of give people some insight into what you're doing, how much of the day you're doing it, and kind of what goes into the hours that you're coaching.
Yeah, non-game day, I mean, there's a few buckets that we as assistants really spend a lot of time on. So game preparation is definitely a big part of that for us as assistants. So amongst the three assistants, we break up all the scouting reports for each of the games. And so you're almost always working on your next scouting report at some point, which gets a little weird because, you know, it may not be the very next game. It's not necessarily always watching our, you know, us and kind of trying to correct the things that we need to, you know, focus on as a team. But you're almost always in some, you know, process of that, of going through the film, the personnel for your next game. So that's a big part. You know, the focusing on us and kind of, again, analyzing where we are is a lot, Steve, but it is also us. I mean, you know, trying to watch all of our games, you know, he watches him over and over and over, you know, much more than we do, and then shares the clips with us and we talk about it. But obviously, as assistants, we're all watching those games over and just trying to, you know, get in the minutiae of not just the outcome, but all of that's involved in what made up that outcome. So that's a big part. And then the next biggest thing for us as assistants is recruiting. That never stops. You know, even the times when, you know, we don't have practice and we're home, you know, it's always going. I mean, if you have your phone, you text or call, or so that's always going. So going to games. So that's a huge part of in particular assistants. And, you know, I think Steve is like a lot of head coaches. Like, it's hard for him to think about that too much during the season when he's so focused on our team and our current team, not, you know, some hypothetical future team. And then there's on days that we have practice, you know, there's practice. So that's really the bulk of it. You know, at an Ivy League school, you know, I've been at now Penn as a player and coached at Cornell and now at Penn. You know, the Ivy League has some stuff that we have to do that other places won't have to do, most specifically around admissions and financial aid for recruits, but then also, you know, with our guys, you know, maybe around the academic side, or, you know, we'll have, you know, people come in to speak to our guys that are from around the university, or we'll have, you know, mentoring programs, or, you know, we'll have programming for our guys that is not specific to basketball, that is more around them utilizing a place like Penn for their future. So that's some, you know, another thing that can take up some of our time. I think, again, in particular, the assistants.
When it comes to the scouting reports you mentioned, I'm curious, how long did it take till you felt like you got really good at that? And what I mean, like, you understood what to look for, you understood how to break it down into a place where you're not just talking about that team, but talking about that team vis-a-vis how you're going to attack them. And are they nerve-wracking because you're worried about missing something? Or was that something maybe when you were a younger coach that you're more confident now that you're going to check all the boxes?
You know, I think you know, some ways, as like a lot of young people, as a young coach, I probably wasn't as nervous or lacked in confidence as much as I should have. You know, I think I also probably had a decent feel for it and was lucky to be kind of on Steve's wavelength a lot in the way we think about basketball. So that made it easier in terms of, you know, the information that I was providing in a scout was kind of like what he was looking for. And I've worked for him all but 1 year in my career as a Division I assistant. So I was lucky in that way, but it certainly has, you know, I'm sure it's gotten better and better, you know, as you go, like everything does for everybody. And I definitely am, in a lot of ways, more confident about, all right, I'm giving these guys the right information. And, you know, it'll change sometimes, you know, like, they're, you know, depending on where we are as a team, who we've, you know, just finished playing, you know, all the contextual stuff, I may change how I deliver it slightly. I definitely am not as good as the younger guys, in particular Joe Mihalik is with all the technology. He's got circles and arrows and titles and words written up there. Mine's, you know, pretty straightforward. But yeah, you know, I think, again, it helps that I've worked with Steve for so long. I kind of know which points to hit and what to talk about, what to hold back from. But, some of it is just, you know, each team is different, and within the course of the year it can change. So, you know, there's some time where it's really diving into all the detail, and sometimes it's like, you know what, guys, let's just go out and play. It's about us. But, yeah, so most of it is just, you know, we cover the personnel and kind of just talk about, you know, what their strengths are. And it's mostly just, you know, how to guard them. It's funny. I think for people who aren't in it, you know, you might think, oh, you're just, your matchup is important. But, you know, there's switches, there's transitions. So or even just being off the ball, knowing what that guy does is beneficial. So, you know, we spend some time in that. And then a lot of it is just, you know, what they run, how they play, you know, do they mix up defenses, those kind of things. Maybe what they do well overall as a team, you know, for instance, Ryder, who will be playing Saturday, they're really good offensive rebounding team. So that, you know, we'll obviously talk a lot about that. So, you know, we go into that, but Coach Downey's not one of those guys where he wants every play call. He's not one of those guys that wants to cover every set exactly, you know, so that takes a little bit of the pressure off because you don't, you know, I mean, some guys, you know, the detail which they have to provide is crazy. And I think Steve's point of view is just that, you know, he doesn't want to paralyze our guys with over analysis. So, yeah, so we, you know, ours are pretty straightforward and pretty simple. You know, I try to make sure that I'm on anything. So if there is a close game or something, I have an idea what they might go to and things like that. But it's hard to always be right about that, you know. So, you know, you said, you know, do you ever feel like you miss something? I'm sure that happens time to time. But it's also – it more so happens because – the guy had just seen a play that he ran at a situation that he hadn't even run before or something like that. It's just, it's hard to be able to forecast every single thing. And so I think for the most part, at the end of the day, you know, it comes down to, you know, who makes shots and who makes the plays. And that really determines who's winning, not so much the scouting report. But I do think that, you know, it can provide us with a slight edge here and there. You know, Coach Donnie was talking today about, you know, us getting better at our baseline out of bounds, both on defense and offense. You know, something like that. If you can win that battle of the baseline OBs, like that could be something that swings a game one way or the other. So I don't want to think that any of these losses are completely my fault, but I think for the most part, you know, even Chris, who's the youngest guy, and Joe, like we're all kind of on the same wavelength of kind of the way what we deliver to the amount of detail it is and getting the message that Steve wants to get to our guys.
So let's talk about your basketball life. What's your earliest basketball memory?
Wow. I was kind of a quiet kid who gravitated to basketball early. My father had played something I can kind of remember when I was little, him playing pickup and things like that. So I, you know, probably my earliest memories are just me going to the local playground or hoop and shooting by myself as a little kid. And then my father worked for the Y, so I spent a lot of times in Y's either playing by myself or trying to get in with the older guys or something like that. Yeah, so I mean, you know, I probably had a basketball, shot basketball, played pickup or something from a very early age till I just stopped playing a few years ago. But you know, through certainly into college, doing something with basketball almost every day for all those years. So yeah, it was a long, I guess that was a pretty long road.
When did you start to realize you were pretty good?
You know, I was never a ultra confident guy, so there's probably always, I may still be wondering if I was any good. I think in maybe like middle school, I kind of started realizing I'm better than most of the other guys. You know, my family lived in Norfolk, Virginia, not a necessarily huge city, big area, but is kind of a big basketball area. And like I played on the junior varsity high school team when I was in middle school. And so some of that stuff, I kind of figured, all right, I'm better than most of the kids my age. And then, you know, when I was, we moved from Norfolk to Miami and I was in high school in Miami, I kind of realized I'm better than most of the guys. But you know, I don't know that I was never a type of guy that was ever ultra confident and that self-assured, which, you know, I think we're going to talk about. But my days at Penn could attest to sometimes my lack of confidence. So, yeah, but probably middle school was the first time I realized I was any good.
When did you start to pass thinking you were, or realizing you were good, think like, I might have a chance to play college basketball? Was it I think most kids dream about it, but was it something like that you really were pursuing, or was it something where you started to get attention and then you kind of, the light bulb went off like, oh, well, maybe I can do this?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways it was such a different time. You know, like I can remember the first time I really heard about guys playing AAU, you know, was Shaquille O'Neal, some kid named Shaquille O'Neal.
Whatever happened to him?
I don't know if anything ever came of him. But so, you know, AAU wasn't as big, nearly as big as it is now. And there wasn't all the social media and the write-ups and the recruiting service guys and stuff like that. So I just played basketball with guys I knew and went into other neighborhoods and played pickup basketball outside, which is probably why I had to get a hip replacement surgery. So I don't know that I thought about it in those ways. I mean, at some point it was just kind of like, yeah, I'm going to play college basketball because that's what, you know, the guys I know, you know, they all go and play college basketball. And I, you know, felt like I was on par with some of those guys. So, You know, I think that kind of happened in high school, I guess. But, you know, it wasn't the same. It just wasn't the same as it is now. You know, I don't remember ever seeing, like, where I was rated or, you know, if somebody thought I was a Division I player at certain times or not. You know, I didn't realize that. I went to five-star camp and, you know, made the all-star team and was like, oh, okay, I'm going to probably play college basketball. I just wasn't a thought like that.
So when you do take the jump to college, what sold you on going to Penn?
Ooh. They were good. They were really good at the time. Jerome and Matt were juniors when I was a freshman.
Jerome Allen, Matt Maloney.
So they were, you know, they had been good. They had gone to the tournament, I think, the year before I went to Penn. So that would be the 92-93 season, I believe, and lost to UMass in a close game. And I think it was at the Carrier Dome in Syracuse. So, like, you know, they were good. So that was a big part. My parents are both from the Philadelphia area. So that probably held some sway. You know, the financial aid thing threw me, and I didn't want my parents to have to pay. That was something I was struggling with. But luckily, my grandmother, who had some money, took that off the plate. So that played a role, you know, coming on the visit. And I really liked cities. So being in a city was great. And then my father had told me, you know, my father's from this area and had gone to the Penn Relays and the Eagles when they were at Franklin Field. And obviously a ton of games in the Palastra. He told me the stories about when people smoked there and the haze of the, you know, and somebody had dropped their ashes on his coat and it caught on fire and all, you know, stories like that and doubleheaders and tripleheaders and whatever else. So I'd heard all those stories and then I saw it. And, you know, it's just such a great college basketball venue. So, you know, the history and all that stuff and just, you know, the city of Philadelphia and then the campus, you know, having a real campus like that. The education was not really something that resonated for me. I think it was much more for my parents. But yeah, so, you know, the combination of the city and the history of basketball and Wilt Chamberlain played in this building and stuff like that was cool. And the stories my father had told me. And then the team was good. And as much as I wasn't a super confident guy, I was like, oh, sure, I can play. I can play with this group, which little did I know how hard and long that may take. So yeah, I think all that stuff was what did it for me.
Fran Dunphy's a head coach. Do you remember your first meeting with him?
I can remember coming on the visit. I mean, Coach Dunphy's got such like a dry sense of humor, and I kind of appreciated that. Even when he, you know, I remember the recruiting calls with Coach Dunphy, and I mean, this was before cell phones, so you know, calling the house phone, and the recruiting process was not something I really liked. I didn't like talking to these guys that I didn't really know, you know, and you know that it's like them just kind of blowing sunshine and. And you know, you gotta just make conversation. I wasn't a real talkative guy anyway, and making small talk was not my cup of tea. And Coach Dunphy would just call and be like, hey, did you play this week? How'd it go? All right, I'll talk to you next week. You know, so I was like, this is great. you know, short and to the point. So, and then, you know, on the visit, he was like that as well. I mean, he was not a sunshine blower, but, you know, obviously, it was by that point it had shown that, you know, he was a pretty good coach and had some success. And then, yeah, so the, you know, I can remember being on the visit and, you know, him having my mom came on the visit, strangely enough, just my mom. And so I can kind of remember that, you know, those first conversations on the visit. And then I can distinctly remember first being in practice and being like, whoa, this isn't the same guy I remember from the visit. You know, he's pretty intense. But I mean, he's such a unique guy, and I marvel at, you know, I see him at so many games, and you know, sometimes he'll just say, you know, I don't, you know, we're not even recruiting anybody. I just like watching kids play. And he knows so many people. The people, you know, people come up to, I always say to people, like, he could easily be mayor of the city if he wanted to.
No question.
He knows so many people. He knows their names. He knows their stories. He knows their, you know, whether it's their family or kids or friends or, you know, and he just has an unbelievable way about him and makes people feel appreciated and important. And then as a basketball coach, obviously he's the winningest coach in Big Five history and all those things. And I mean, I kind of hope, I guess it's now six schools. He just keep going so that he coaches all six at some point, although that may mean some of my friends would have to be let go. But, I mean, it's just an incredible story. And it's amazing, too, because I don't know how easily he could live anywhere but in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. He's been lucky enough to not have to live anywhere but Philadelphia, except for, I guess, the short time he was at American as an assistant. Yeah, so Coach Dunphy, I think, like all the guys who went through Penn, has made an impact on all the guys.
How was the transition to college basketball for you?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the first, I think it was my first pickup game, and like being like, hey, these guys are a little bit better than, the kids I played with in high school. And then, I think getting a layup blocked or something, and been like, man, it's... That's never happened before. But yeah, I mean, it is a big transition. I think guys don't realize how much harder it is for most freshmen. I mean, obviously there's certain freshmen that can come in and make an impact right away. But even for those guys, it's still a process. There's still freshman moments even for the guys who make the biggest impacts as freshmen. They're not certainly not at the point they'll be after a few years. It's just so much different. The physicality, the size is different. The speed of the game is different. The attention to detail and just how every little thing matters is so much different. And it's hard to be ready for that. When you were in high school and you were just, give me the ball and trying to stay out of foul trouble right. So that my team can win. That part is so much different. And most guys go through the process of having to work themselves into the rotation, which, it's hard for guys who play college basketball. There may never have been a time where they weren't in the rotation, from when they first started playing. So that's a tough process to go through. And then you have your parents or whoever in your ear saying, oh, you should be playing more, which makes it, doesn't make it any easier. So yeah, the whole thing is a real process. And I was never good enough to play in the NBA. I'm sure that process of making that jump is probably even more of a process to get used to that.
Do you remember the first time at Penn you felt like you made an impact in the game?
There weren't many, so I probably should remember them all. I it's funny, I remember my first game, I think it was my first game, was at USC. And I get in for the first time, and it's too long ago, I can't remember the guy's name, but one of their star players like just took the ball away from me and went down and like reverse dunked it. And our second game was at Ohio State. And, in the practice leading up to that game, Coach Dunphy made reference to that play. It was like, that'll never happen to you again in college basketball or something, which I'm sure happened too many times. I remember that being like, ooh, that wasn't great. That wasn't a great way to start off my career, but it was a nice dunk.
What was it like? I mean, you're playing, you mentioned Jerome Allen. This was really kind of a special time in Penn basketball history. Were there moments when you kind of realized that, or are you kind of too young to appreciate the context of the times in which you are living and playing?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely knew we were good. I mean, part because of some of the teams we beat. Actually, I remember, I think it was, it would have to be my freshman year, the Daily Pennsylvanian interviewed Andy Barada, who was a senior when I was a freshman. And actually, our sons have played together in youth basketball since then. But Andy said in the DP, they asked him, who's the second best team in the Ivy League? And Andy said, our second team. So I can remember having that feeling of like, we're really good. And being proud of that. But I also kind of think I felt like, sure, we're good. And didn't realize, again, how hard it is to be that good at any place, let alone an Ivy League school, with no scholarships or whatever. So, I probably did take it for granted in some ways, and didn't realize, what an amazing group that was. Ira Bowman transfers in. So my freshman year was his sit out year. So that my sophomore year, we have three NBA players,
yeah.
Which is, incredible for most teams, let alone an Ivy League team. So, yeah. So I think it was, I definitely took pride in how good we are, but I don't think I understood how kind of an exception that group was. And I mean, it's 48 straight league wins is pretty amazing.
No, I think a lot of the stuff people started almost, and I don't mean people, I mean like at large, people kind of just took for granted that, oh, well, that's just what Penn does. And it's just so incredibly difficult. So you play your first two full seasons, junior season, you start the year, and then you decide to stop playing. What happened?
Yeah, so, you know, I think some of it was, you know, my mother was sick. My mother had cancer for the first time that year. But some of it was just, you know, I think for so many guys, I think this is true for the guys I coach now. You wrap your identity so much around the sport, and I was certainly that way. And Coach Dunphy was a guy who did not play a ton of guys, so his rotation was pretty short, and I was kind of, you know, in and out as a freshman and sophomore, and really was going to get my chance for the first time as a junior, and did. You know, he certainly gave me a chance. I think I started some games. But just the whole process, I did not handle well. I struggled with just confidence, and I struggled with what I perceived as my failures for not playing as much as I, you know, had hoped and things like that. So that was probably the biggest part of it, is just, you know, struggling with that. But, you know, back then there wasn't the focus on mental wellness and all those things. So I was probably struggling with some of those things that now maybe would have gotten, you know, attention in a different way. But yeah, you know, my, you know, it was affecting things and wasn't sleeping. And I think I just got to the point where I was like, I'm falling apart. I need to do something. And, I think Coach Dunphy, you know, rightly so, was like, well, you know, we've got a team here that we've got to, you know, that's the focus for us as a staff. And so that was kind of it. Like, just I'm a wreck, and just, you know, in some ways I look back and wish I could have found a different way, but felt like at that moment, like I needed to do that just to keep it together. So, yeah, I mean, it's not something I talk a lot about, because, you know, I don't know that most people know. I'll mention it every once in a while to the guys, but they don't, you know. They usually don't delve into it too deeply. But, definitely a pivotal moment in my life of trying to figure out who I am, and my relationship with basketball hadn't always been healthy, and trying to move forward. And I did not – I didn't crush it. I didn't – you know, I didn't have all – I definitely didn't have all the answers, and it was a struggle. And the older me would probably advise the younger me differently, but, yeah. I was just trying to survive at that point, I think.
But you stayed at Penn, though.
And I did.
You graduated from Penn.
I did. It was a strange last year and a half, I guess it would be, you know, for me. But, I would like to think it helped make me who I am, and maybe help me, even as a coach, maybe understand when, I mean, because, again, I was saying this to one of our guys the other day, like, almost all the guys who go and play college basketball, their careers don't end up like they envisioned it would. You know, I think there's the guys who are stars, and so maybe those guys a little bit it turns out the way they think it might, or that they imagined it. But the vast majority of guys, it doesn't. And that doesn't necessarily mean that their role isn't helpful or productive, but it can be very hard to have that sorted out for themselves, to figure that out for themselves. It can just be hard to when it doesn't end up the way that you perceive. It can be hard to continue to move forward and to realize that that's okay, that's part of life, and is part of, you know, it's also part of teams. You know, there are roles, and there are guys who are, you know, statistically bigger factors than guys who aren't, but you need all of that to make good teams and to make productive groups. It can be hard to reconcile those struggles sometimes, and I failed miserably at that. So I do think that can help me now coach these young guys who most of them have some version of that.
So you're there for a year and a half. You're still at Penn. You're not playing basketball. What is your relationship with basketball like? Were you cold turkey? Like, did you turn completely away? Were you going to games and just watching? Because that would, I would imagine, be incredibly difficult. What did you do?
Yeah, I stayed as far away as I could from the team. Definitely didn't want to see any of the coaches. And, you know, a lot of it was just shame, you know, like, you know, I felt like I had fallen so deeply that I had to quit a team, which is like, you know, for guys in athletics is like the worst possible sin. So I stayed away. I didn't go to any games. I did, you know, I would see the guys away, and that was fine. But, you know, sometimes they'd make reference, you know, you should come back or whatever. And that, you know, I didn't really like that. But I did play every day. I would play pickup on campus every day. I got a group of guys that's what we did every day. So, you know, it wasn't, it probably wasn't the healthiest way to deal with it, because I just really poured myself into going and playing pickup all the time. And it wasn't like my I really poured myself into my academics or what have you. So, yeah, I ended up every day with a group of guys, and we'd go to one of the couple gyms on campus or somewhere else and play pickup. That was basically what I did. But I did not go to games. I did watch some games here and there. You know, I think the year that I left the team was the year Penn lost the the playoff game at Lehigh to Princeton, and then Princeton beat UCLA, and I struggled with that. You know, I struggled when that team didn't win and get to go on. And you know, one of my closest friends is Ira Bowman and Tim Krug. Those two guys were seniors on that team and really, really good players. And you know, I felt shame in not being able to help them, you know, go to the tournament and I felt like a failure, I think, in terms of basketball.
So when do you start to dig out of this? I know you end up at the University of Western Ontario, and I'm fascinated to find out what the pathway is there. But when do you start to feel like you said you're playing all the time, but when do you feel like you started to get into a healthier headspace with regards to basketball, your role in it, and what it could do for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways, is, you know, I still struggle with the healthy relationship with basketball. You know, I think for whatever reason, basketball had been kind of the thing that a quiet kid that I went to and could kind of pull myself out of being that recluse, you know, maybe helped me with my relationship with my father, you know, sharing that love for basketball. But it was also a thing that for whatever reason, my anxieties and self-doubt manifested itself in the most obvious ways. So there was always a turmoil within me. You know, I just happened to be better than most guys of my age. And, you know, when you get to college and it just can't be that you're better than everybody, you know, there's other things that are going to go into whether you're successful or not. You know, that's where I failed and wasn't able to persevere. So, you know, some of that, you know, what I did after was, again, still trying to reconcile that. And you know, so going to play in Canada, which I had never been to and came to go to in a strange way. You know, I had talked to the coach at Westchester and some other Division IIs about transferring and playing 1 year. And it was just, you know, again, I had tied so much of my self-identity into basketball. It was just kind of like a last-ditch effort to save some of that identity and have a success at the end of it. But, you know, again, having never been to Canada, got a call from a coach in Canada who had ironically talked to Coach O'Hanlon when he was at Lafayette and strangely ended up there and was able to play 2 years instead of one, which I would have only had one in the U.S. So played those 2 years, and they, you know, for the most part went well. And I had some success and then tried to play professionally a little bit. But, you know, the struggles that I had at Penn came up from time to time. So I never really got past it as a player. And I think in some ways, the love of the game, but also trying to figure out that struggle in the game eventually led me to coaching as well. And I hope that, you know, the guys that have not those struggles, but struggles of their own, that maybe that can help me advise them and help them through their own struggles and issues. Because, again, most guys have moments of struggles. Now, theirs may not manifest for the same reasons that, you know, whatever was in my personality or makeup led me to those issues, but they'll have their own, and I can be more sympathetic to it and maybe have some strategies that maybe they wouldn't think of on their own.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with University of Pennsylvania Associate Head Men's Basketball Coach Nat Graham in just a moment. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. This new year, discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda. KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, we return to our conversation with University of Pennsylvania Associate Head Men's Basketball Coach Nat Graham.
Was the time in Canada, was the basketball fun? And I don't mean because it's Canada. I just mean, were you able to just enjoy playing for playing's sake more than it sounds like most of your time at Penn?
Overall, yes. But consistently always, no. And then I think, again, that was just, you know, something that I was never able to, as a young man and player, really just figure out on my own and be able to compete and play basketball in a frame of mind where I wasn't putting undue pressures or making it out to be bigger than it is.
Didn't define you.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's just a game, and I made it into so much more. And I'm not exactly sure why that was. It was being a shy kid who, you know, felt like that was my only outlet, or relationship things in my life, or, you know, whatever it was, I definitely built it into more than just a game. And some of that, like, I get, like, you know, the competitiveness, and I mean, as coaches, as players, you know, we're way more competitive and concerned with the outcome of games than somebody who, you know, doesn't know much or care much about basketball would be. But I think maybe went a little too far with the undue importance I put on it.
What was life like at the University of Western Ontario besides basketball? Like, it's interesting because you go Norfolk, Miami, Philadelphia, Western Ontario. There's a lot of culture differences across the board. Like, so what's life like out there past basketball?
Yeah, I mean, I had never been to Canada. So, that, you know, the first time I went up there, if anybody familiar with Canada knows, they like their Tim Hortons, the coffee shops. So, you know, we stopped at a place, I think, at Tim Hortons on as I drove up there the first time I was going to see the school, which is in London, Ontario, which is I guess it'd be like 2 to maybe 3 hours from Detroit on the way to Toronto. So we stopped and you know, as Canadians get the perceived as that, you know, the people at Tim Hortons were really nice, and I can remember kind of being like, you don't know me, why are you being so nice to me? This is not how the people act at fast food places. So yeah, I mean, it was definitely a different experience, and culturally, the places I had been at basketball, especially before I had come to Penn, I had often been like the only white guy, and that's not true in Canada. White people run wild. So that was different. I mean, the team was mostly white. And then, you know, just, I mean, they say a lot, and it was really cold. It was definitely different. But you know, I met some of my best friends. I met my wife. My best friend. It turned out to be great. I definitely grew up. I had a better basketball experience, which is, you know, kind of what I'd been searching for and kept searching for after trying to play pro and a little bit and all that stuff. But it was definitely a far cry from the city of Miami.
Yeah, no question about that. So what, Ireland and Denmark you played overseas?
I didn't last too long. But yeah, I played a little bit overseas.
Good experiences? I mean, just the life experience, or were there moments of, oh boy?
Yeah, I mean, I loved seeing, again, different cultures and countries I'd never been to, and I really liked that. When I was in Denmark, I went to my wife was there for part of that, and we went to Berlin, and like, that was amazing to me, like, learn, you know, seeing the history and learning the cultures and trying different foods and all that stuff. I really like that. The basketball side of it, the stuff I did like about my college experiences when they were fun and enjoyable was the camaraderie and being a part of a team and trying to win. And, you know, that wasn't the same with the professional experience. So I didn't love that. I didn't love the professional stuff, and I wasn't making enough to keep trying to do it. And again, when I ended up stopping, my wife was with me. We weren't married yet, but I felt a little guilty to her, like dragging around and again, not making very much money. So I didn't last long. In some ways, you know, I look back and I wish I would have just kept going a little bit more because of the other stuff, just, you know, getting to see other places. And it's hard to get to Europe when you're, especially now that I have kids. So, you know, I feel like that was an opportunity maybe I missed of getting a chance to hang on with that a little bit more before you get to the real world. But yeah, it was, for the most part, yeah, it was very cool to see the different places. The basketball was just okay at best.
So when does coaching come on your radar?
You know, I got my master's in education and I was thinking I was going to teach. And then while I taught for a year while I was getting my master's. And then I kind of started thinking, yeah, you know, maybe I could coach. And, you know, I think I started thinking, you know, I've had this strange relationship with basketball where, you know, it's been something I've gravitated to so much, but it's been, you know, a source of so much struggle for me. And maybe I can help younger kids with it. So I was thinking, like, well, you know, maybe I'll get my teaching stuff and be able to come not just an emergency certified teacher, but and maybe coach high school or something like that. And then, you know, I think what happened was we had to go back to Canada because my wife, who's 5 years younger than I am, hadn't finished school in Canada. So she had to go back. We in Canada, they've got that socialism thing. So the school is real cheap for her. So we went back so she could finish school. And while she was doing that, I couldn't just work anywhere. So I started coaching and volunteering with a friend of mine. And that's kind of when I got into it. And we were coaching everything. I was coaching boys and girls, high school, kind of AAU programs, but they didn't call it that. And then started bugging Steve Donahue about giving me a job that paid no money with his staff. And then eventually he agreed to it. And he's been stuck with me ever since.
That was at Cornell. And Steve Donahue was on staff when you were a player at Penn.
He was. He was part of the staff when I left the team as well.
So what was that dynamic like at first from the time when you leave to when you join him on staff? Like, had you guys been in constant contact or was it a layoff once you kind of left the team? Like, how did it kind of work?
So I had gone and watched him play. I think it was the first time I had gone back to the Palestra since I left the team early when he got the job. Those first couple years, his teams were not very good. But it was one of those first couple years I went and see him play. And then as I started thinking, oh, maybe, you know, coaching something that I want to do, I had worked some of his camps. And then we were in more contact. And he told me, hey, you know, I could probably help you if you really want to do this and you want to get a job. And so I started, you know, every job that came up, I would hit him up and say, you know, can you help me with this job? And, you know, I think at one point he said, listen, I'm not Bobby Knight. I can't help you with every job. So, you know, eventually, you know, he had openings for his third assistant. He passed me over at least once. And then eventually I was a thorn in his side enough that he took me. But it was kind of a strange scenario. Now, I just my nature. I didn't want to like overstep as a young coach. And I mean, he's got so much energy and is unbelievable in practice. And so I would kind of like be reserved and, you know, I don't want to talk over him or anything like that. And I think part of it too was, I mean, he's always coached Donahue to me. He was an assistant coach when I played. I to this day cannot call him Steve to his face. So, you know, that dynamic was, it took a long time for me to really be able to break it. And in some ways, I still haven't. You know, I still call him Steve. I mean, I still call him Coach Donahue or Coach D instead of Steve. And, you know, I think probably for him, you know, he still saw that 18-year-old that he first knew and, you know, left the team and was struggling. And, you know, but, you know, I think for the most part, I think I'd like to think I've been able to help them, and I've been with them. I mean, it's five years at Cornell, four at Boston College, and then however many it's been here. I think since 2015, so it's been a long time. And I'm sure the assistant coach I am now is much different than the assistant coach I've been with them a lot of the way. So hopefully that's a good thing. He's kept me around.
How much did your life as a player, as basketball, and what you dealt with and the decisions you made, how much has that shaped who you are as a coach? Because one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, because I feel like in all the coaches I've known, you have an empathetic toolbox that I don't think a lot of people have. How much do you feel like those trials and tribulations that you went through has helped you as a coach, just getting into the headspace of kids that don't have the answers and don't know where to turn for them sometimes?
Yeah, I think it's probably a lot. You know, I don't know. I sometimes wonder what would I have been like if I hadn't gone through that and had struggles. And I think sometimes for the guys who don't have the struggles and become coaches, you know, you kind of just, you know, well, why can't you figure this out? I did. So, yeah, I really try with every kid to understand where they're coming from when they are struggling. And it is very hard for all of us. You know, I think we all do this, like with body language and just our perception of the way someone else is acting and what we kind of in our own mind determine what is the root of that. So I try to talk to the guys and get more to understanding the reality of why what's coming out, rather than just, you know, attach my perception to it. So I do, you know, I'd like to think that helps. And I think many of the things, not this in particular, but many of the things that I do is a good offsets Coach Donnie well. And I think in some ways that's part of the value, is that some of the things that I do and do well aren't necessarily his strong suits or things that he might focus on. I also think, like, you know, the guys who are struggling, sometimes as a head coach, I mean, you have to, you know, your real mandate is to win games. And so you can't necessarily take all the time to figure out those guys who are struggling the most. You got to be pushing forward with the whole group in mind. And as an assistant, I have more time to go to those guys and try to help them. So I do think, like, for me, I definitely get wrapped up in the winning and losing, but ultimately the winning and losing isn't why I do the job. And it's more the relationships and helping, you know, young guys grow into young men. And as much as I've had some successes and won some championships and been to a Sweet 16, which was awesome, and I remember those times, I also take a lot of satisfaction in the successes of helping these young guys hopefully, you know, be better people and being a part of their lives and having the relationships I have with a lot of guys to this day. So I think that's different. I think those struggles definitely impacted how I look at that and why I coach.
Do you feel that coaching has helped to kind of close the circle of Nat Graham, the player? Like those struggles and those things maybe you left on the table, or the things that you look back on and maybe, God, if I could have just, but what you've been able to do as a player, pass, I mean, wins and losses, yeah, Sweet 16, Ivy title, that's important and all, but those victories with the kids?
Yeah.
Has that helped you put your playing days in a better light for you? Or kind of,
yeah,
it's, give you that satisfaction that maybe you didn't get from the playing days?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, the word I was searching for before has helped me, it's allowed me to reconcile a lot of it. There's still regret. Like I know that as you get further away from it, you can become more honest. And I probably wasn't as good as in, you know, I envisioned I could be, or the success wasn't exactly that I could have had, wasn't the way that I thought it, you know, was back then, that it would manifest itself back then. But I do know now that I could have been a helpful, good player at this level and benefited those teams. And I do have regret for that. The fact that I couldn't figure it out. And I've said this to some players, like, ultimately there's all kinds of variables involved. But at the end of the day, for the most part, you control whether or not you're successful. You can control that. It's not easy, but I could have controlled that, and I could have been successful, and I could have navigated that and been successful, and I didn't. So, you know, it does help reconcile the struggles and helps me understand it and come to grips with it and peace with it. But there is still some regret that I didn't do it, you know, and I ended up in Canada and different places to try to, but I wasn't able to do that at Penn, and I could have.
When you come back to Penn 2014 on the coaching staff, was it almost surreal? Like, what were the emotions like when you came back to Penn?
Yeah, it was definitely surreal. It was such a traumatic time in my life, you know, and something that I, you know, it had been much more of a struggle than just an athletic struggle for me. So yeah, it was very surreal. You know, in some ways, I kind of saw it as like, okay, maybe this is a chance to have some success at Penn that I wasn't able to as a player. I mean, a huge part of helping me through all that is Ira Bowman. I mean, I love Ira. He's like a brother to me. You know, I would do anything for him, and I didn't necessarily know that to that extent when we played together, but then coaching with him and rooming with him all those, you know, all those road trips and everything, we became so close. And so that was, I mean, that was the biggest gift of the whole thing, was just, you know, our relationship. And we never talk about this stuff really. And I can actually remember talking to him when I left the team and him calling me and being like, don't do this, but we never talk about it. But he helped me immensely. As you said, a surreal moment for me coming back here. I mean, part of it was I was without a job and I needed a job and I got three kids and this was an area I knew and all that stuff. But and my parents lived in the area. But it wasn't always easy for me to come to grips with coming back, and Ira was the biggest help in that.
How long were you in contact with Fran Dunphy a lot or knows? Those early years, like after you left in early coaching career?
No. I think there was a lot of shame and you know, again, attaching my perception of what he would be thinking. Mm-hmm. It wasn't pretty. So I was very reluctant to be in any contact with him. I think I think a friend of mine who also played at Penn had convinced me at one point to like reach out to him, and I did. But even those things, I was, you know, I didn't, you know, they felt awkward, and I, you know, but he has never towards me. I don't know his feelings on the situation. It's been a long time ago, and I mean, he won a lot of games without me. So he didn't need Nat Graham that much, but towards me, he has never given me any reason to be uncomfortable, even though I was, and worried about it. The people who know him know how he is. He's been nothing but good to me. And I'm sure, I don't recall really asking him for any help in my career, but I mean, just knowing how he is, I would think he would do it in spite of the fact that I quit his team in the middle of a season. You know, I think my last game might have been against Princeton, something like that. So, I mean, we had already played an Ivy League game. And, I, you know, as a coach, it's hard for me to imagine a kid leaving at that point of the year who's playing, you know. So he's handled it better than most, for sure. But we've never broached the subject.
What is, and I think I know the answer to this, the favorite part of your job at this point?
Yeah, I mean, the relationships.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when we're recruiting, I say to kids and families sometimes, you know, it's like coaching guys who would be your friends if I wasn't so old, you know, that, you know, we'd be hanging out together. I mean, we're very fortunate. We just have such great kids. And the basketball, you know, they're good basketball players and sometimes really good basketball players. And we've had, you know, I've been a part of some really good teams. But beyond that, just being around the type of people that we're fortunate enough to coach and then see them grow and what they become and then have kids and have their own families and careers and stuff like that. Yeah, that's probably my favorite part about it is that.
Where does the ideas of wins and losses rank with you? Because for a lot of people, in coaching and in sports in general, it's the end-all, be-all. But given your pathway, it's obviously important, but is it not where people might think it is?
I mean, there's lots of times where, I mean, it's everything. You know, there's definitely a lot of moments where, I mean, it's all I'm thinking about and how can we get better. And, you know, I try just to keep myself sane, you know, with the stress and pressure of being a coach, and think about the larger picture in terms of the growth of the team more than just the wins and losses and the process of being a good team. I try not to, you know, the relationships and all that stuff is probably my favorite part of it, but I try not, you know, I try not to minimize the success of the team and the growth of the team because of that stuff. You know, I'm paid to coach the team and we have to have success, and, you know, I'm not paid to be a social worker or something like that. So I try not to have that other stuff minimize the success and being a part of the process. So, but I do try to minimize Bill Walsh, the football coach, had a book that the score takes care of itself. Let, you know, the score will take care of itself, and make it about the process of being a better team, and coaching the guys and all that, rather than just the straight wins and losses. Cause that stuff, at least for me, it can drive you crazy.
What do you think the world of college basketball is going to look like in 5 years, given transfer portal, name, image, likeness, and just it feels like every day we're waking up to conference change or kids transferring that you never thought were going to transfer. Like, what do you think it's going to look like? And I mean in the general sense, not Penn, not the Ivy League specifically, but just in general.
You know, I don't know. I go back and forth with this. I think there's a chance that the NIL proves to be not completely sustainable to the level it is now, certainly for football, and then, you know, secondarily for in particular men's basketball. And it, you know, I think that may be true for the transfer portal too. I mean, you know, as much as there's been some teams with success who have really delved into the transfer portal, I think there's some teams that have found it difficult to meld a bunch of new guys together who have been really successful at one place, and then put them all together and have them have their success take somewhat of a back seat to the overall success of the team. But I also hear all the prognostications about, you know, what we could be headed to and the breaking off of maybe the Power Five and those type of things. So I don't know that I certainly haven't figured out where it's going to go, but I hope that maybe some of those things become not absent, either the transfer portal or NIL, but maybe a lesser fall to a lesser level, and that college basketball won't be drastically different and college athletics won't be drastically different. But I think the majority opinion does not seem to agree with that. So I think the NCAA tournament has like a 9 years left on its TV deal. So I don't know if maybe that gives us a window of time before any drastic changes to college basketball. But I think the majority opinion seems to think that it's not going to stay the way we've become accustomed to. And some of that's probably some things that did need to change and could be better if they change. But those of us that get paid because of college basketball don't want to see it change to the level where we can't still have a livelihood.
Nat Graham, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Thank you, Matt. It was great to be here.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Like to thank University of Pennsylvania Associate Head Men's Basketball Coach Nat Graham for being our guest and coming down to our studios to chat. Now, if you like the show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a big favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on the platform formerly known as Twitter, now known as X, at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well, at Matt Leon 1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. you get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.